Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome into an Inside Carolina post-game podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. We're sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt. That is Sherrell McMillan. North Carolina falls in the Sweet 16, 89-87 to Alabama, setting up college football playoff semifinal of Clemson and Alabama in Crypto.com Arena. Sherrell, I'm going to get you in here. Just overall thoughts, man. I've been watching Carolina basketball a long time, and what I saw tonight just feels so familiar over the years. Different coaches, different players, different everything. Same ultimate result. But your overall thoughts?
Yeah, I think it all came down to they just really couldn't get a stop when it really needed to. It was a little surprising how well Alabama rebounded. Looking at the final stats, I think Carolina ended up winning the rebounding battle. But I was surprised that it was that close, and especially the offensive end. I mean, it felt like Bama got chance after chance after chance throughout the game, and they really took advantage of it. And for UNC, you know, the whole thing is that they may not be as athletic as a team, but they're a bigger, more mature, more physical team. And honestly, you couldn't tell. Alabama was just as physical as UNC, scrapping just as hard as UNC. And I think that mitigated the advantage that UNC thought it had coming into the game in that respect. Now, what kept UNC in the game for a while was the three-point shooting in the first half, which it kind of gives Villanova championship game vibes, where I think they hit 10 or 11 in the first half and then couldn't hit much of anything in the second half. But, you know, to me, ultimately, it really comes down to they weren't able to stop this high-powered offense. And it wasn't necessarily to Sears. I mean, Sears was okay, but he didn't do much in the second half. It was pretty much Nelson and Griffin. And that's what you can't allow. You can't allow options 3 and 4 to kind of dictate how your defense plays and your coverages and all that stuff. So I think between the defense and then, you know, Alabama has taken a lot of heat all season for being an awful defensive team, but they pretty much locked down RJ Davis and Armando Bacot in the second half. I mean, it was an impressive defensive performance in the second half by Alabama. Now, did UNC contribute to that? Absolutely. They definitely contributed to it. But I think you do have to give Alabama a little bit of credit defensively because they made it really tough for RJ Davis. They made it tough, you know, on drives. They really ran him off the three-point line the entire game. And then, you know, it happens in basketball where players have off games. And it just so happened that RJ Davis had his worst game since the national championship game tonight. And they still almost withstood it. So, I mean, to me, that's kind of what sticks out is that they had a great game plan for RJ Davis, even though they gave up. I mean, Carolina got 5 threes combined from Trimble, Cadeau, and Wojcik and didn't win the game. So that kind of tells you that it was just one of those nights where the shots that RJ Davis has hit over and over again, month after month, game after game, just didn't go in.
Yeah, RJ, 4 for 20, 0 for 9 from three-point range, 7 assists, 1 turnover, 8 for 9. Alabama shot 48%. You mentioned the rebounding, total rebounding. Carolina got that by 3, 46-43. But I think a huge point here, points in the paint, Alabama 36, Carolina 32. and a lot of people are in the chat. And shout out to the close to 500 people in here after midnight, after a loss. So props to the inside Carolina fans. Layups. North Carolina on layups, Sherelle. 12 for 28 and 3 for 4 on dunks. And we all know the last dunk that was missed. It's almost inconceivable you go 12 for 28 on layups, but credit Alabama's ability to defend the rim, which, to your point earlier, I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, and Nelson had struggled, especially offensively. He had struggled the first two games in the tournament. I think the graphic said he had 6 points in the first two games, and you knew he was a talented player, but I didn't know that this was coming, especially that 7-0 run that kind of separated Alabama for a little bit. But, you know, Bacot, it's kind of been a bugaboo for him his entire career. He's a good finisher around the rim, but there are some that just get away from him. And if you think back, I think he's missed a dunk in like 4 of the last 6 games or 3 of the last 6 games, something like that. You don't want to put it all on one play, but that was obviously a big one. There were a couple of other ones around the rim from various players that probably should have went in. But I think it really comes down to, like, when your best two players are 12 of 38 from the field, you're just probably not going to win. And they got contributions that they normally just don't get offensively, and it just wasn't enough. So when you're playing a team with that kind of offensive firepower and you put up 87 points, you usually think you're going to win. But it just, to me, it again came down to is couldn't get a stop. They couldn't get 2 or 3 stops in a row to stretch that lead from, you know, 3 or 5 to 7 or 8. And so then when Alabama goes on a 6-0 run, there's still a little bit of a cushion there. I think that was the big thing. And then the way they started the second half was pretty abysmal, if we're being honest. I mean, it was, I think, a foul, then a turnover. They were 2 of their first 17 from the field, and that 8-point lead evaporated pretty quickly. I don't want to bring it up too much, but there were some national championship game against Kansas vibes when you start to look at how, I want to say dominant, but how well they played in the first half, especially offensively, and then how it just went away from them in the second half, and they really couldn't get anything established. So, again, Alabama's a good team. You have to give them credit, but I also think Carolina definitely let a few things slip, and that's why the season has come to an end.
Yeah, hard to believe the season's now over, but to your point earlier, you mentioned Cadeau and Trimble hitting those threes. I mean, if we'd have talked about this beforehand, and we said Carolina wins if, and you say Elliott Cadeau has 2 threes, Seth Trimble hits at least 2 threes, you think that's pretty much going to be a lock for North Carolina. And you mentioned the national championship game a couple of years ago, and it definitely felt like that. It also felt like the Alabama game last year, the 4 overtime game. Carolina had chances to get out there, especially in overtime, just could not do it. One thing, Sherelle, that I wanted to ask you about, Sears. Let's talk about Sears a little bit. Great player, struggled in the second half. They were effective against him, but I felt like they let him get to his left just far, far too much. And I don't know if that's what they were trying to do there. What'd you see there, you know, trying to defend him? I thought it was extremely odd that they sold out to keep him from beating them, but then at times they just let him get to his left hand and he made some plays.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think the defense was that bad, honestly. It just, I'm not trying to be redundant, but they're just a really good offensive team. You know they're going to score, you know, at least 80 points. That's pretty much what they do in every single game. And it was just a matter of whether or not UNC could string along a couple of stops. I thought a few times that Bacot switched off on him, I thought it was fine. He made a lot of plays. And I think even though they're about the same height, he just seemed a little more physical than RJ Davis in this game. He took him down low a couple times on drives and was able to finish over him. So, yeah, you know, the game's just over, so we're reacting. And I don't have a great answer. I really honestly feel like that's one of those where Carolina probably should have won if you look at some of the things that they did wrong and some of the mistakes they made. But to Alabama's credit, when Carolina made those mistakes, they seized on them. And, again, that's the difference between winning and losing in March is, you know, it might look like a great shot and you might think you can make it, but is it really the shot that you should be taking in that specific situation? It's basketball IQ, all that stuff mixed together. A whole year, hundreds of practices and 30 some games and, you know, just hours and hours of film study, all that stuff. It comes down to, you know, a play or two. And if you make the correct one, or you say, you know what, this might not be the best thing, think about it, let it breathe, great. But if you just act on that instinct, sometimes it's not the best move. And I think there's a few times, not just that one situation that everyone thinks I'm talking about, although that was one of them, but there were
just
a few
say
times.
It. Just
yeah,
say
I mean, the Jalen Withers shot was not what UNC needed. You saw the bench reaction. I think that kind of shows you that it wasn't what Hubert Davis called out of a timeout. I think that was a situation where you need to get the ball back to the point guard and let him try and get fouled. That was what was working in that last 3.5 minutes when they erased a 5-point deficit and got up by three, was RJ Davis driving, getting fouled, and going to the foul line. So give him an opportunity to do that. And it was kind of, I won't say taken from him, but that's just a shot that you can't take in that situation.
Looking at the minutes, and we're talking with Sherrell McMillan. Again, we're sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt and CongruityHR.com/Tar Heels. Check it out. A lot of people in the chat. Shout out 760 folks here in the middle of the night. Even got a North Carolina State fan hanging out in the chat. Hey, all
which is,
are welcome.
Which is amazing to me. Like, dude, you're in the Sweet 16. Enjoy life. Like, stop
and you're
thinking about Carolina for one time in your life and enjoy something that hasn't happened for you in 40-some years. Like, enjoy it, but you're in here trolling a Carolina, you know, podcast. It makes no sense. Like, and people wonder about the reputation that some of them get sometimes. Like, that's why. So
yep.
Anyway,
100%, man. This place would be the last place I would be thinking about if I were pulling for some other team. There,
especially when my team has a chance to do something they haven't done. You know, I'm in my 40s now. They haven't done in my lifetime, and you're on Inside Carolina. Like, anyway, back to it. Sorry.
Back to it. Let's talk about second half minutes, which, Sherrell, I think are a little bit shocking, but I want to get your basketball mind take. Trimble with 4 minutes, Cadeau with 5 minutes in the second half. I understand it. They weren't very effective, or at least Cadeau wasn't terribly effective, and we've seen his minutes sort of shrink, but I was surprised Trimble wasn't out there in the second half. What'd you think overall of that? Again, we are minutes after the game. We are second-guessing the heck out of everything. But you always seem to be able to make it plain for folks. What'd you think of the fact that Trimble and Cadeau were not out there at all in the second half?
Yeah, so I'm going to try to guess what Hubert Davis was thinking. Like Tommy said, we haven't heard any post-game reaction or any explanation or anything. But my guess is that, you know, Cadeau hit those two threes, and I think it emboldened him a little bit. And he took, I think, three more and missed all three. And during that time, Grant Nelson was completely in the paint the entire time. And there was absolutely no room for Bacot to do anything in the paint. It also limited the amount of space for drives for RJ Davis. And so I guess the thought is that he could sacrifice Cadeau's, I guess, offensive playmaking to put in Paxson Wojcik, who, while he hasn't shot great this year, I guess maybe has a better reputation as a shooter. So that's my guess, is that's what it was to clear out some space for Bacot and for RJ Davis driving lanes. And I do think there is something to be said for a guy who's played a whole bunch of college games being able to handle that environment. Cadeau is still very young, even though he's played a full season. So if I'm guessing, you know, that's probably a part of it. The Trimble one, I don't really have an explanation for, because the thought process is, you know, Trimble made two threes, and all respect to Wojcik, he's a better defender than Wojcik, probably a better ball handler, and can finish better in transition if it came to that. So that's the Trimble one I don't quite understand. I think you can kind of rationalize the Cadeau not playing as much in the second half a little bit, unless there's something that happened that we don't know about. And again, that's not my explanation. That's me trying to figure out what Hubert Davis might have been thinking. But the Trimble one is the one that I don't quite understand.
Yeah, and for those of you so inclined to believe in the plus-minus as a be-all, end-all, which I think we universally hate, Elliot Cadeau minus 10, Trimble minus 7, Paxson Wojcik leads the team with plus 9. So if you think that number's important, there you go. Carolina falls to Alabama 89-87. Sherelle, you see the chats just blowing up here. The message boards at Inside Carolina are going to be flaming hot. We've been here before. We've discussed in these situations. What's next here? The season ends abruptly in a game that you didn't think it was going to end in. Baycott's career is over at North Carolina. Cormac Ryan's career is over. R.J. Davis will have a decision to make because he can come back. The transfer portal is in turmoil across the country. It's no longer like, hey, this guy's a sophomore. We'll see him next year. What do you think the next days and weeks look like for North Carolina basketball, college basketball in general?
I think this is going to be a hard one for them to swallow. I do think they probably feel like they let it get away. Again, some of the shooting between Cormac Ryan and Seb Trimble and Paxton Wojcik and even Cadeau, when you get that kind of shooting, you expect to win. So I think the one thing they really prided themselves on post those Connecticut and Kentucky games was their defense. And it frankly failed them in this game. So I think that's going to be tough for them to swallow. They'll, talk about it in the post game, and I'm sure they'll have lots of conversations tonight, probably get on the flight tomorrow evening, head back to Chapel Hill, and it'll be right into player meetings and guys starting to make decisions on, what they want to do, whether they want to, try the NBA draft process, whether or not they want to enter the transfer portal, whether or not they want to return. And then the Carolina staff is going to start getting on the phone with guys who are in the portal probably in the next, if they haven't already, probably in the next 2 or 3 days. So this stuff, there's not a lot of time to soak and lick your wounds. You got to pick it up and get moving and start working towards next year pretty much immediately. I recall back in 2022 when they lost to Kansas, devastating loss, like just something that is probably take a lifetime to get over. But 3 days later, they were in Orlando at an EYBL AAU session watching guys on the recruiting trail. So you have to have a short memory when it comes to this stuff, and you have to keep it moving. And I think that's what they'll do. It's unfortunate because, again, they had a pretty fantastic season, all things considered. When you start thinking about, and I know no one wants perspective right now, I understand that. It's fine to be mad, not telling you to be mad, not getting on the soapbox or anything. But I do think when you look at the totality of the year, it was a pretty successful season. I think the only little hiccup was really that ACC tournament championship game loss. But you make it to the Sweet 16, to the third round, you're going to face a really good opponent. And they just ran into a team that hadn't been playing well entering the tournament. You look at some of the numbers, and over the last month, Alabama was a top 50, top 60 type team, but you knew they were talented. And the first game against Charleston, their offense carried them. The second game against Grand Canyon, their defense kind of carried them, in Grand Canyon just not being very smart. And then tonight, I think in the first half, their offense carried them by keeping them in the game, and then their defense took over in the second half. So they're a team who probably played, I don't want to say it's the most complete game because they still give up 87 points, but for their style of play, this is probably as good of a defensive second half as they can provide. So they literally saved their best defensive half for the half that mattered the most. So I think that's where things stand, and UNC is going to have to pick it up and move forward. But again, number one seed, won the ACC outright in the regular season, beat their rivals Duke twice, beat State 2 out of 3 times, beat Wake Forest. I mean, that's a pretty good year at UNC. It could have been a lot more, but a pretty decent season.
Indeed, Carolina falls to Alabama. I wanted to ask you about Baycott since we got over 1,000 people in here. Can I ask you to sort of put your summation of Baycott's career at North Carolina out there? Is that too much to ask at this time of day?
Oh, man. How much time you got, Tommy?
Hey, yeah, we got 1,045 folks in the chat, and they come to hear you. They don't come to hear me. I've been on this stuff way too much, but just sort of put it in perspective a little bit, Sherelle. I mean, it's over with. 5 years, ton of points, ton of rebounds, a few missed bunnies, important missed bunny tonight. Where you put it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great career. I mean, let's not overreact and say it's not. Anyone who leads the, you know, is an all-time leader at UNC in rebounding, which he did in 4 years. So no need for an asterisk there. Is a good player. I think it's probably going to be the most, I would argue it'll be the most unique career like there will ever be at Carolina. Because one, if you would have told someone 30 years ago that a guy played for 5 years, they like, what happened to the NCAA? Did the NCAA go away? So that's one thing. Two, he came in, you know, pretty heralded with Cole Anthony, and his first season was disrupted by something that none of us ever imagined could happen, which was a global pandemic that shut down the world for the better part of a year. And then he was a part of Coach Williams's last team and, you know, played in his last game. UNC's Hubert Davis takes over, who was kind of like the perfect blend of everything UNC when you consider his lineage and playing at UNC and who he coached under and who he played under. He plays for him. He has the probably two biggest non-national championship wins in school history by beating Duke at Cameron in Coach K's last game and then beating Duke in the Final Four, the first time Carolina's ever played them. But then he's the leader in the face of a team that bombs as much as any team maybe ever. The first preseason number one to not even make the tournament. But then he comes back for a fifth year and gets Carolina kind of back to where it was supposed to be. So it is a complicated legacy. And then I didn't even add to the fact that he is forever the face of I think, UNC NIL and what that means and what it is and what it's become and what it's going to be. So he's got all this stuff where he's mixed up in like these huge moments in Carolina history all over the course of five seasons. And as a player, I think he was just really consistent pretty much for his last four seasons. He was pretty much a 15-10 guy every game for four straight seasons. But I think people just always wanted a little bit more from him. And I don't know if that's fair or not, because I think he pretty much maxed out what he is as a basketball player. And I think it's just funny how legacies can change. You know, one ankle turn instead of two ankle turns, and we're probably talking about a guy whose jersey's in the rafters, a guy who won a national championship, but an ankle turn, and we're talking about a guy who played 5 years and just never quite got over the hump and won. I mean, you know, he won those two games, but he also won an ACC regular season championship, but that's kind of it. So, again, complicated legacy. I think a really good Carolina player, one that people will remember fondly, but he's going to be associated with kind of the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. So it's a weird thing.
Weird thing it is. Sports are cruel. Sports are great. Tonight was Grant Nelson's night in North Carolina Falls. Grant Nelson's going to join Harold Arsenault. He's going to join guys like that across the – who else, Rael? You know, guys you've never really heard of that have gone off and ended Carolina's tournament.
Donya Abrams, Darvin Ham. Who's the guy from Penn State? Is it Ivory? I think Titus Ivory, maybe?
Yeah, North Carolina kid.
Yeah, all the guys from George Mason. I thought who was another one? I'm missing somebody that's really important. Oh, Remy Martin. You know, he did nothing in the entire tournament and hit what, four threes in the championship game. So yeah, he'll go down in history with all those guys, with Jim Jackson and Lawrence Funderburk and, you know, all of Corliss Williamson and, like I said, Darvin Ham already, Andre Miller, Michael Doliak. Like, there's legends for the wrong reason.
Absolutely.
And of course, Miles Simon. How could I forget Miles Simon?
Yep, somebody dropped that in the chat as well. It's just it's crazy how it works. But Carolina's out. Carolina's done. Stay tuned to Inside Carolina for Adam and Jeremiah and Jim Hawkins and all their coverage from L.A., all of Sherelle's work on the recruiting trail, the Coast to Coast podcast. There's a bunch of spring football stuff on the site. If you care to look at that, switch gears and check that out. There is no offseason here. Carolina's season's done. It'll be hot and heavy over the next several weeks, I'm sure, as the rosters. And Sherelle, tell people about when you should to look at rosters and realize this is what the roster is going to be. And before we get out of here,
I would say start doing your first guesses, or not guesses, your first kind of, okay, what does this look like around Father's Day? It might be settled before then, but the last three seasons, they've added a player after June 1st. His first, Hubert Davis's first few seasons. Dustin Garcia signed in July. Pete Nance signed in mid to late June. And Okwankwo signed in early July. So there's a chance that it'll go that long. But I think they're, you know, UNC's in good shape. The brand, so to speak, has been restored. Their NIL program is strong. RJ Davis has the potential to come back for another year. Harrison Ingram has the potential to come back for another year. And if some of the guys who have a chance to go elsewhere or might be thinking about entering the portal stay, then Carolina's a very attractive program for some of these transfers because they've seen UNC on the biggest stage. Like I said, UNC has a really good NIL program. And then it's Carolina basketball. So there's a lot going for UNC. I think a Final Four would have really cemented this team as, you know, just one of the better ones. But when I think about it, I do wonder if they kind of punched out of their weight class for a while. The cohesiveness and the connectedness and then even the defense for a long stretch. I think I don't want to say overinflated what they were, but it allowed them to punch bigger than they were. So I think that's one thing to consider, that this team, in my opinion, and the opinion of the media who voted for all this stuff, did overachieve. But that's not going to help ease the sting of a loss like tonight, especially the manner in which it happened.
Carolina's out, 89-87. Stay tuned Inside Carolina for a lot more coverage of the basketball team and everything. Johnny T-Shirt and Congruity are sponsors. Visit them. Shout out to all the people that have joined these podcasts and these post-game podcasts. We had 2,000 after the second Duke game. We've had close to 1,000 or over 1,000 tonight. It's all about the Inside Carolina subscriber and the people that pay attention, even the fans of other schools that come join us at midnight to talk Carolina basketball. Everybody's welcome.
Sherrill, no, he's not welcome. Get a life. Get a life.
Sherrill, thank you. Thank you for everybody. Thank you to all my guests that have joined me on these shows this year. We'll be back again with them next year. It'll just be a little while longer until we talk again. But Sherrill, always, my friend, thank you.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them!
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.